newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts, every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you today?
Well, I've been evacuated again.
Again, I know, you poor thing. You and the three dogs.
Do you think that because this is the second time in 3 weeks I've been evacuated, I can not pay my mortgage for those days I'm not in the house? Because if I'm not using the house, do I have to still pay?
I wouldn't recommend it.
It's not a good idea, though.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just
beside yourself, actually.
Beside myself. So I think I may sleep here tonight.
You know, I think it's a great idea because
yeah.
I won't be here.
right.
But before we get into our articles, we have Jeff Giordano in studio with us. Jeff, thanks for being here. He's a fourth generation Santa Barbaran, and that's saying a lot, and president of longtime local staple Giordano's Inc. And thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for not calling me Peter.
Nothing. We'll get to living in the shadows or the big footsteps. So what do we have in the news today,
Neil? The first article I thought was interesting. It's entitled, U.S. Stock Market Rally Was No Match for Global Peers in 2017. And what's interesting about this article, which says that, which reveals that non-U.S. stock markets gained 24% in 2017 versus 19% in for the S&P 500, is that, you know, people sometimes in America become very chauvinistic and very—
Well, we have a hometown bias, if you would, you know, home state bias.
Right.
And what I love about this, actually, sorry, did you have a, were you making a point?
No, I would never interrupt.
Sorry.
As opposed to you interrupting me.
Exactly. Well, you know, you're used to it. So what I think is interesting about this is that, you know, in 2016, I got many phone calls saying that why are we investing internationally? Because the U.S. outperformed international holdings in 2016. And this is exactly why you diversify, because in 2017, international beat the U.S. And so really what we like to have in a portfolio is diversification. And that's what we mean by diversification. At Arlington, our portfolios in general are two-thirds U.S., one-third international. And it gives you a great opportunity to have non-correlating assets, have different asset classes outperform.
And just to add a little bit of politics, which we hate to do.
which Neil loves to do.
One of the things that I find interesting is that the president keeps saying about how we should all give him credit for the tremendous stock market gains in the last 12 months. The reality is we underperform the world. So it's difficult to basically—
Well, after the Golden Globes last night, you know, Oprah might be running for office. Local modern Montecedan.
Yes, I certainly hope so. As opposed to if no one else will run, I'm going to have to do it. And
I was already chairing your campaign on this very program.
Right. So the next article is entitled "Index Funds Turn Top Heavy with Tech," and you know this article points out one of the ironies of index investing, which is supposedly a way of investing passively, but in a sense, because as certain stocks, in this case the tech stocks, Apple and Facebook, have done so well, the percentage of these tech stocks in the S&P 500 has risen from 19.7% last year to 23.8% this year, so that people who are invested in index funds are, in a sense, not maybe doing it explicitly, but are heavily invested in tech stocks more so than they were when they first made the investment.
Right, because those fangs, so it's Facebook, Apple, Google, Netflix, they're really have led the charge. And for 2016, basically it was those five companies that made the S&P 500 index be positive for the year. And so it's just something good to know as you're crafting or crafting your portfolio and putting it together, that that is one of the potential drawbacks of having an index fund.
And, you know, just picking up on something you said a couple of minutes ago, you were mentioning correlations. And over the last 10 years, since really 2007's blow-up, where almost everything was correlated. So it didn't matter what you owned, everything went down. Over the last few years, correlations have begun to become more normalized, where many stocks aren't correlated to the market. And so
And that's actually ideal. You want non-correlating assets, because in 2008, with the Great Recession, if you had non-correlating assets, you wouldn't have had everything dropping. But unfortunately, during that time, which, you know, added insult to injury, all assets went down due to the nature of that recession.
And, you know, the reality is that people began to believe, which I think is somewhat borne out by the empirical evidence, that picking stocks is not a very productive way to invest, and therefore have gone into index funds. But part of the reason it hasn't been helpful is because correlations were in lockstep. If correlations become less less than one and becoming more
non-correlated,
then stock pickers may be able to do better. So it's just like anything that goes to an extreme sometimes bounces back. So whereas now everyone's given up on stock pickers, to the extent that we do have now normal non-correlations, it may be an opportunity.
And that's why at Arlington, what we do is we have half of our equities in passive investments like index funds and half of or ETFs and half of them in active management, because really you don't know what is going to outperform, and that is the goal in investing, is to perform at or better than the market.
Well, you know, there's another article I have here which shows you how dramatic it's been. A correlation of 100 or 1 means that everything's exactly correlated. 0 means that everything moves in an independent way, and this year, correlations are about 20% compared to 80% in 2015. So it's really a dramatic change.
Yeah, which is a welcome change, I think.
So next article is called "The Rot Beneath Some Index Funds,"
and this is by Neil's
favorite author. Yes, he's a rock star. Jason Swig writes on Saturdays for the Wall Street Journal, and he's got the same sensitivities that I do. He talks about things that affect.
You're very correlated.
Yes. But here's the thing. The title of his weekly column is called "The Intelligent Investor," which is what attracted me to him in the first place. But what he said in this article, which is really interesting, is that mutual funds, as most people probably know, sometimes, unfortunately, give investors phantom income. That is, to the extent that a mutual fund sells a stock in the fund because they have redemptions or for whatever reason, and you own the mutual fund, and let's say you bought it 6 months ago, but the fund had capital gains that had been unrealized from 10 years ago, you end up having to pay the tax. Whoever owns the fund at the date that they report their 1099, which is usually like December 21st.
But what I think is important here, because some people lose sight of this, you still get the money, though.
Well, you don't get the money. It's not a distribution. You get the value of the increase, but
right,
you don't get the money. And so you get a phantom income tax. You get a tax without getting cash. But the interesting thing is it's true for index funds also, which people haven't focused on, because the real reason that funds will take capital gains is if they have an increase in redemptions versus new sales. And index funds generally have been doing so well, there hasn't been a need to realize capital gains. And the article points out that PNC, which is a big fund, for whatever reason, happened to have a lot of redemptions versus new sales in 2017. And as a result, they ended up returning 17% of the fund in the form of capital gains to investors who did not receive any cash. So even index funds can be a place where you may have to be concerned about phantom taxes.
Which is why you might want to look at an ETF option instead of a fund option, because the distributions are handled very differently in an ETF structure, which is an exchange-traded fund, as opposed to a traditional mutual fund structure.
Right. And you may want to explain what that means, because I don't think people realize that there's a difference between an ETF and a mutual fund. And the ETFs basically are traded like stocks. And one of the other advantages of an ETF is that when you buy a mutual fund, you get the price at the close of the day. When you buy an ETF, you get the price intraday, and both selling and buying. So you actually get less friction because you're buying and selling during the market period. You're getting the actual price at the moment you sell or buy. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290. KZSB, and we'll be right back.
With this winter storm warning, I'm Richard Dugan in the AM 1290 News Center. Mandatory evacuation orders have been issued for the Thomas, Whittier, Sherpa, and Ray Fireburn areas, including all areas north of Highway 192, east of Cold Springs Road, west of Highway 150, and the areas along the Tecolote, Eagle, Dos Pueblos, and Gato Canyon, El Capitan, and the Whittier Burn area near Goleta. This has been a winter storm warning from the AM 1290 News Center. I'm Richard Dugan, inviting you to stay tuned to AM 1290, the News Press Radio Station.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College, which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we have in studio with us Jeff Giordano, who is the president between two divisions at Giordano's Food Service and Pacific Beverage Company. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, so tell us a little bit about yourself. We know that you are a fourth generation Santa Barbaran, but how did you end up back in Santa Barbara? Give us your life story. So you went to Duke for college.
Sure. Well, should I back up to the beginning?
Sure. You were born.
All right. I was born at
Cottage
St. Francis Hospital.
Oh, St. Francis.
As well as my father and my two sons were born there before it was turned into housing for Cottage Hospital. And so, and then I did the path of Santa Barbara Junior High, Santa Barbara High School, and went to Cal Berkeley for undergrad, got a degree in economics, then worked in the worked for the Gallo Winery for a few years.
Oh, all right.
In thinking about coming into the family business down the road. And then after a few years there, and I looked to go into graduate school and ended up at Duke University in North Carolina. So great experience there.
And did you get your MBA?
I have an MBA there, yeah.
Wonderful. So St. Francis holds a special place in my heart because I was the president of their foundation board. After the hospital closed, they have a foundation arm. And so I served on that board, and it was a great organization.
Very good. Yeah, it's sad to see it go. I think for people that grew up here, it's sad to see it go. But obviously, we have a great hospital and cottage to serve the community.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, so you got some experience at Gallo Winery in terms of the beverage distribution arm. Explain to us a little bit about how that works in terms of getting contracts and how do you become a distributor, so to speak?
Sure. It varies between the two businesses we have. There is a difference between the two businesses. In the beer business, we actually have distribution rights for exclusive territories. So the territory we cover is Ventura, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and southern Monterey County up to San Ardo. If you've driven by there, there's a few tumbleweeds and two liquor stores, I think is about what's there. But
well, at least you have the two liquor stores.
We do.
Then, right?
I've stopped in and said hello to the owners, and they're very nice people. And so exclusive territories. The beverage.
So by that, you mean if I own a liquor store and I want to own or I want to sell Guinness, I only have the choice of using you to distribute.
That is correct. Okay. So, we happen to be our largest supplier happens to be Anheuser-Busch, but we also sell brands like Guinness. We're also distributor for craft brewers like the Firestone Walker Group. We started with them at Case Zero, and now we're over 700,000 a year for the Tri-Counties. And so really the beer business is about building brands. And so we have an infrastructure in the Tri-Counties. We have four warehouses. We have 330 employees in the beer business, 60 sales reps, 60 drivers. And really the attractiveness to us in the Tri-Counties is our infrastructure, the people we have in place, the warehouses, and our ability to get to market to some 3,000 customers. And we feel we're more of the local player in this area. We compete against two Miller Coors distributors, but we have more operations, more people, and we think we're closer to the marketplace than they are. So there are, with all of our suppliers, there is a distribution agreement. And that agreement, in return for the exclusive distribution rights, their requirements on us as a distributor. For example, we have to refrigerate their draft beer at 38 degrees in all of our warehouses. We have to refrigerate, if it's a craft beer, put it at 40 degrees. We have to replace for Anheuser-Busch, we have to replace the graphics on our trucks every 3 years. All of our people we have to clean tap handles every 2 weeks for every tap handle we have in the marketplace, and that would be thousands. We have seven people that all they do is clean tap handles in the Tri-Counties.
So they go actually to the individual bars, restaurants, and clean the taps?
They do. They clean the taps and the lines. And, you know, that's a...
So that isn't actually the bar's job. That's somebody from Giordano's that comes out and does that for them.
From Pacific Beverage Company,
from
right.
Pacific
so,
Beverage.
And, yeah, so we provide that service. It's in our contract with our suppliers that we have to provide that service, and it ensures that the quality of the beer is there. And I think, you know, a lot of people that if they consider themselves beer aficionados, you can tell if the beer if the lines aren't clean because they'll be very yeasty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could even get a nice clop of yeast in your beer if it were really bad. So, but we do that every 2 weeks. And it's funny, when we're talking to these young up-and-coming craft brewers, you know, my expression is we're going to take care of their baby, right? So
right.
This is something they gave birth to, and they're going to grow it into a big brand like a Firestone Walker, and they're very concerned about their baby, that we take care of it. So the two things that they really care about are temperature and clean draft lines, very critical.
And dealing with someone like Anheuser, where they have incredible power, do they require sales objectives for you to maintain the contract besides the cleaning issue?
Right. So, no, there are no sales requirements that would drive something in the contract for us to fail to meet the requirements of the contract. Theirs are more about having infrastructure and organization in place. And in fact, when I negotiate contracts with prospective suppliers, I never allow for there to be a cause provision there for failure to make a sales goal, because there are a lot of things that are out of our control. And I can give an example. We always call it the Costco example. If you're in Costco 1 year, you get orders, your sales go through the roof. Next year, Costco doesn't take you in, your sales are in the tank. And it has nothing to do with what we did. And so there are different things, but suppliers can raise their price. They can change their branding. I don't know if you remember a brand called Pyramid, Pyramid Hefeweizen. Well, one of their new brand managers made a brilliant idea to call it Haymarket Hefeweizen. They changed the package, changed the brand, and the sales dropped about 50% the next year. So for me, and that's a lot of what I do is negotiate distribution agreements. I don't put sales quotas in because I think there are too many things that are outside of our control. We will agree to execute on distribution, get points of distribution in the retail trade, such as package or draft, try to get draft distribution. We'll do that with the opportunity for cure in the agreement. But we don't want to lose our distribution rights because our sales were down for a quarter.
As price an issue, the wholesale price you pay to Anheuser, is that just that's a price that doesn't change, the percentage of versus retail?
So let's see. So the beer business is unique, and in separating it from our food service, if we talk about that later, it is a regulated business. There's something that came out of the repeal of prohibition. A lot of the states regulate. The 21st Amendment gives the states to regulate the oversight of alcohol beverages. And basically, there's something called price posting. So interestingly, in California and in our territory, we sell beer for the same price to every consumer. So we post that price with the state. If you were to go to Sacramento today, you could see what Pacific Beverage sells Budweiser to anybody in the territory. A 36-pack can of Budweiser would be the same. How people try to, someone like a Costco, and you can see this, what they do with a lot of customers, they look for varieties and pack sizes. They want to have a different pack size than somebody else would carry, like a Vons or an Albertsons or a Joe's Liquor. And so that's how they kind of differentiate themselves. Typically, they're large pack sizes, like a 36-pack or a 40-pack, something that a little old lady has trouble getting in her basket most of the time. So
right. That's Costco.
Yeah, it is Costco. So, yeah.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
My name is Ruth Roosie. I'm a retired teacher. I'm 91 years old, and this is how I live United. I say retired, but not really. Once a week, I read books to children as part of United Way's education program. Reading to a child creates links between language and literacy. It creates a bond between grown-up and child. And believe it or not, it prepares them for a better academic future. Oh, we read about frogs and flies and pigs with wings, all sorts of juicy stuff. It's a joy to watch all those little faces. I figure I have the time and they have the need. And I've always believed that if we're not here to help each other, then what are we here for, really? My name is Ruth Roosie. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we're in studio today with Jeff Giordano, who is the president of Giordano's Food Services, which encompasses both, I guess it's Giordano's Inc. and encompasses both the Giordano's Food Service and Pacific Beverage Company.
Right? Correct.
And so we've been talking about the beverage distribution arm. And so, you know, in keeping to the money talk way that we are, how are these tax reform with the excise taxes on beer going to affect your company and distribution of beer?
I don't think that they will affect them at all.
Okay.
The excise tax reform, I actually saw a trade rag about that this morning. It should amount to $142 million a year across the U.S. For brewers between 1 and 6 million barrels. And then it's, you know, 2 years, there's a sunset to it, and depends on whether they extend it or not. In my mind, I just don't know that it'll do anything. I mean, I don't think you can expect to see
a decrease of drinking alcohol.
Well, I don't think you can expect to see a decrease in price on your six-pack in the coming year. I don't think that'll happen. I think that it's going to small brewers. Probably they'll pay down debt, maybe make some more investments in their facilities, but I don't think the consumer won't notice any difference because of that tax. It's more of a moral victory for the industry. I think it's really insignificant, though.
Gotcha. Yeah. And now with cannabis coming online, is it interesting to watch just because it's now, I guess, not federally legal, but states-wise legal, to see kind of the infancy of that industry and how it correlates with, or maybe not correlates with, the repeal of prohibition?
Sure. In our trade journals, it's written about almost monthly.
Oh, I'm
about,
sure, right.
What the experiences are in Colorado, Washington, the states that had recreational marijuana convert first. And the bottom line is it's inconclusive at this point. I think in Colorado, beer sales are not down. Some people think that there are craft beer and marijuana are really go hand in hand. And
that's random. How about some water, maybe?
They might have to rehydrate every once in a while, right. but get some snacks. But I think we're looking at it with caution. But I wouldn't say that would be our number one concern. I think really in the beer business is mature. It's not growing at this point, and that's
even with the craft beer, it's not growing.
Not growing because the large suppliers are declining. Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, Heineken USA, Boston Beer, Diageo. Diageo Guinness might be up this year, but Boston Beer is down. Pabst is down. I was just looking at year-end numbers this morning. I don't happen to sleep with this stuff in my head, but
sure you.
Sometimes I do. But mature business. I saw a presentation at the National Beer Wholesalers Conventions a few months ago that basically beer has lost a 10% share of ethanol alcohol over the past 10 years to distilled spirits. Hmm. So a 10% share of gullet, if you will, has gone to distilled spirits. And so beer is mature. The craft segment is growing still. In California, I want to say last year was maybe just a wash. A little hard to measure with the tap rooms because just of how that volume is reported.
Right. So I find it interesting because Pacific Beverage Company carries some local craft beers. And how did those agreements come into place? Like, I know that you carry Captain Vatti's.
We do. We carry
And they're such a small brewery that, I just found it interesting that you teamed up.
So... really, we sell, this year we sold 1,200,000 cases of craft beer, if you will.
Wow.
And Firestone Walker being the largest, and then Figueroa Mountain.
I almost don't even think about Firestone Walker as a craft beer anymore.
Exactly. They're pretty big. They're pretty big, and they're one of the larger regional players now. And so, really, in a mature industry, you try to place bets on categories and players. And so the domestic premium category is declining. That would be the Bud Miller Coors. It continues to decline. Import beers are growing, but really there's only one winner right now, and that's Constellation. Constellation is the importer for Modelo, Corona, Pacifico.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, we don't carry Modelo. our competitor does. And so, really, only one large importer is doing well, Constellation. And ironically, Anheuser-Busch had to give up their 50% ownership in the importation of the Modelo brands when they bought AB in the United States. When Interbrew, InBev bought AB, mm-hmm. They had to get rid of the 50% ownership that they had in these Modelo brands. And now those brands are eating their market share. And ironically, Anheuser-Busch owns those brands in the rest of the world. They bought the Modelo brewery, but they can't have it. And here in the United States, they're sitting here watching those brands eat their market share because of a consent decree from the government.
Do they ask their distributors to contribute to advertising like some franchises do?
Yes. So we have a cents per case agreement. So we contribute a certain amount of cents per case in marketing. And really we're contributing to it at the local level. So that would be through sponsorships of events, venues. We really, in the Tri-Counties, dominate in the venues. We have the Ventura County Fair, the Santa Barbara Bowl, the Mid-State Fair up in Paso Robles. We invest a lot of money in those venues because, advertising is really a tough thing to measure these mm-hmm. days. Does a billboard do anything? Does a commercial do anything? But we know when we sample product, we know when we sample our product with consumers at the Santa Barbara Bowl that they're going to, they're going to taste the product. We actually are selling product, and hopefully we grow an affinity towards our brands.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back after a glass of beer.
With this winter storm warning, I'm Richard Dugan in the AM 1290 News Center. An evacuation center has been opened at the Campus Center cafeteria at Santa Barbara City College for residents in the Thomas, Whittier, Sherpa, and Ray fire areas who have been issued mandatory evacuation orders. The Santa Barbara City College Evacuation Center is also accepting small animals, and large animals may be evacuated to the Earl Warren Showground. This has been a winter storm warning from the AM 1290 News Center. I'm Richard Dugan, inviting you to stay tuned to AM 1290, the News Press radio station.
I spend a lot of time in the backyard, and I'm the center of attention at summer barbecues. In 96, I made some of the tastiest s'mores you've ever had. In 01, we stayed up all night telling ghost stories with the neighbors. Yeah, I know I've got a bit of wear and tear. And sadly, in 09... it was me, your backyard fire pit, that accidentally started a wildfire. When a summer breeze carried one of my embers into some dry brush.
Sparks from an improperly extinguished fire pit can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara, where you probably can get a cold beer.
You can get a cold beer. They have more Italian beers, Arnaldi's Cafe, given it is an Italian restaurant.
I'm sure they do.
So, I find this conversation really interesting because maybe I didn't read the truck's advertisement as clearly. I had no idea that Giordano's owned the beer distributing company. Is that because I'm ignorant, or is it purposefully not the double branded?
Well, so Diane is smiling over here, so maybe the first part is true. But
see, that's the beauty of radio. Yeah, no one can see that I'm laughing on the inside.
So I can't comment on that first part. But I think it's just that they're separate businesses, and there are reasons for that. We talked about in the beer business, if I go back to it, the beer business is really about the brands. It's about territories and in which we distribute the products. And it's about the fact that it's a regulated business. The food service business, I would say the Giordano's food service business, call it a complete difference from that. We have no territories. It's the wild, wild west. No. It's almost pure competition. It's really not about, the only brand is about is Giordano's food service. And, who we are as a company. And we were talking about advertising and so forth. I really don't spend money to advertise Pacific Beverage Company. Because nobody cares who that is, really. I mean, except
right,
for
when
me
you go to a bar, you buy a beer.
Yeah, no, I want to know if I'm drinking a Bud Light or a Firestone or a Fig Mountain. Giordano's Food Service is the brand, so that's different. And one of the things that the comparisons that I make is when you go to a restaurant, you know what brand, if it's a bottle, you know what brand of beer people are drinking. There's a lot of draft beer being sold now, a lot of craft beers. But in the food service side, there's really only two products that you might know you're consuming, and that's Heinz ketchup and Lee and Perrin's steak sauce. Or maybe, what's the other one?
French's mustard.
French's mustard, maybe. There might be three things. There might be, if you look at even the sugar packet, it might be C&H sugar or something like that. And if you look, it might say Giordano's Food Service on there, and my father drives our sales reps crazy when he goes in and finds a different sugar packet. So everybody knows our sales reps sell sugar packets at cost. Let's be clear about that.
Well, I hear your dad is not a pushover, so they're right to be a little nervous.
Actually, we have a call.
Oh, great. We have a caller.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, caller.
Yep.
Hi, thanks for calling in.
Hi. Sure.
Do you have a question?
I just wanted to know it. Yeah, at what level does a how big does a craft brewery have to get before the Giordano's are interested in carrying their product?
Good question, and the question is the answer really is not very big. I think we were talking at the break about here locally, Captain Fatty's out in Goleta. You know, really, you talk to a lot of people, they've never heard of it. And it's a little, you know, really a little hole-in-the-wall operation. And I never would have in my business plan, say, to put a bar next to the CHP.
I know, yeah.
That wouldn't have been the first thing I would recommend. But, we just, it's, and so really, they're very, very small. But so really for us, it's about looking at, the two things that I consider are, does someone have great liquid? And again, everybody is, most craft brewers think that their baby is the prettiest and the best.
Just like parents.
Yeah, like parents. And then the other thing is, do they have good branding? Branding is very important. I would argue that there are a lot of fantastic IPAs out there now. I mean, hundreds. How do you remember what you just drank? We were talking about that at the break. How do you remember what you had last week or last month? I think branding is very important. And then I think the other thing that we look for is, do the people have a good connection with the community? And, are they involved in nonprofits? Do people, come in and sample their beer? And, one of our supplier partners that I can remember that did a great job with this was Figueroa Mountain. I thought they always really did a nice job connecting to the community. And so that was something that caught our attention. So the bottom line is, doesn't have to be that big, maybe 1,000 cases a month. Our smallest supplier might be that, whereas Firestone Walker's above 700,000 cases in a year. But, we can only carry so many. And we can only, I think, doing an effective job for so many.
So for those craft brewers out there listening, what, who's the decision maker? Do you need to taste it and you need to like it as the first step? Yeah. Who decides?
Yes, that would be me. but actually, we have a great craft beer team. I have a director of craft brands. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not the expert at differentiating between IPAs, but I think I have a pretty good eye for those other parts that I mentioned.
And do you also deal in a hard cider as the same? If you take on the, like Captain Fatty's, for instance, I know that they have a hard cider. Does that also become part of the package, or do you just distribute one particular beer of their flavor, if you will?
So basically, when we sign a distribution right.
Well, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, caller.
So basically, when we partner up with someone, the agreements that we sign are typically for all of the brands underneath that name. So for Captain Fatty's, it would be for all of Captain Fatty's branded malt-based beverages. Whether or not we'd add a cider is, we might. We carry ciders. Typically, the ciders that we have are from other suppliers.
And how big is the cider market at this point?
You know, the cider market in California, I think, is still under 1.5% of the malt beverage market. It doesn't seem to be. There are places in the U.S. where it's 5% on the market. It doesn't seem to be going in that direction here.
It's not cold enough here.
I don't think it's cold enough here. I think I agree. I don't think it's cold enough here. I don't think people sit inside bars enough here. The warmer climate, and I would say the demographics too. I think what we see is with Hispanic consumers, which 40% of the population in our area doesn't seem to play in that with that consumer base. And but you know, in the UK, it might be 10 or 15% of the market, and I think those cideries are still hoping that gets that way.
You know what's really interesting? The news reports 15 years ago said that the younger people aren't interested anymore in hard liquor. They just want to drink beer, and then it was wine, and now it's back to hard liquor. There is, you know, a constant shift. Maybe it's not it's secular rather than cyclical, but over a period of time, there are changes. And there was a belief back 15, 20 years ago that hard liquor was pretty much done. And now it's coming back. There's something about, you know, doing something different, I guess, that makes people energized to buy a product.
Am I answering this question now?
It was just a speech.
I like to make a speech. He likes to do monologues.
I think you're absolutely true. This year I told the story. My first job out of Duke was with Joseph Seagram in New York, and I was an assistant brand manager on Seagram's Gin, and not a name that everybody recognizes, but certainly people recognize the Seagram's name. And I worked for the Bronfmans in New York, and great experience. But I was in the business when distilled spirits were declining. And so, it wasn't that positive of a time.
But I bet you learned a lot, actually.
I learned a lot. And I had an assistant from Brooklyn. It was like I was in the movie Working Girl. Is that the one with Melody Griffith?
Yeah,
she'd come in every morning and bring me my paper. It was just classic. It was a great memory. But what's happened between then and now? A couple things. One, if you look back 20 years ago, there was a kind of a self-imposed ban on electronic advertising by the distilled spirits industry. Now, I was watching some NFL games this year. I saw more distilled spirits commercials than beer commercials. It was so unbelievable. So that kind of self-imposed ban is gone. Another thing you'll see is that we like to say as beer people that they've invaded our space. But if you go to a football game, you go to a Dodger game, a Laker game, you'll see distilled spirits served almost everywhere, which is amazing. And that's a huge change. And then when we go to our conventions, our industry is trying to figure out what are we doing wrong, you know, what are we losing, and I think that one of the things, the thought is that we're being out marketed. I mean, if you look at the sophistication of the marketing of the distilled spirits, I think it's been very strong. I think the marketing from the large brewers has been very weak over the past 10 years, including our main supplier, Anheuser-Busch, and I think they would even admit that to you.
Yeah, their Super Bowl commercials have been subpar.
And not so good. So we'll hope that they're better this year. They brought back somebody from the past on the Bud Light brand. You've probably seen those dilly-dilly spots, and there's some buzz about those. But I just don't know if that makes people change their habits.
Well, what people should do is do what I do. I watch streaming videos, and I was mentioning before we went on the air that I've been watching a Scottish detective series where the protagonists drink at a bar a scotch and a beer. So if we pair them together, then we may have something. You're listening to Money Talk, and we're going to be back on AM 1290 KZSB with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And so, Jeff, we've spent most of the hour talking about Pacific Beverage Company. And so let's transition a little bit into Giordano's food service. And really, what makes people choose Giordano's food service over your competitors? What really distinguishes Giordano's from everybody else?
Sure. And I would say, may sound trite, but I'm going to say the people. And really, you know, on the food service side, people wonder, how can we compete with a behemoth like Sysco or U.S. Foods? And the bottom line is we're in a purchasing group called Unipro, which allows us to, it's actually Unipro itself has more sales than Sysco does, but it's a bunch of independent members. Sometimes we're able to harness, so we harness that buying power that a Sysco has. And so, but ultimately, like we talked about earlier, in the beer business, you are buying service from Pacific Beverage. You're getting service, but people are familiar with the brands. They want to see the brands that you carry. On the food service side, that's true to an extent. Some people have, their preference for a certain type of dressing or a certain type of meat. But there are multiple providers of dressings and meats. And produce, certainly, and they're interested in the service level that we provide,
And your dad was quoted, which I think is interesting, that that you have just over 100 employees at Giordano's have been with the company for over 20 years, and I think that says a lot. So, what makes people stay so long? That's probably the same reason why people choose Giordano's over one of the bigger distributors.
Yeah, so I like to think it's the culture and the environment that we set, and certainly that was a big part of what my father has done over the past, I shouldn't say this, but 50 years. And
I know, I read he was 83. Yeah, I was like, wow.
83 still comes in every day. But then, I think a lot of it, the culture is what I've set forth in the past 20 years. And are established. And one of the things that I really focus on is communication. I get in front of all of our employees every 6 months. I give them a state of the business. I go all around our operations at night, day, in the different counties. And I think that communication and feedback loop is really important.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. I think we're going to have to go out and have a cold beer to celebrate this
exactly.
interview. Thank you. And you've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB. And we'll see you all back next week.